morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the IGO, INGO Access to Curative Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group call on Thursday, the 10th of May, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the WebEx room. If you're only on the audio bridge, would you please let yourself be known now? And I do have Jim Bykoff noted. Anyone else?
Paul Tattersfield.
And Paul. Thank you very much, Paul.
Nat Cohen.
And Nat Cohen. Thank you. All right, well, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Petter Rimforth. You may begin.
Thanks. Petter here. Let's pass on to point number two on our agenda, and thereby also passing it over to Susan Kawaguchi.
Thank you very much, Petter. And thank you all for joining this morning. Looks like we have a good turnout. And as you all know, I am the GNSO Council liaison to this working group. And with some of the challenges we've had in the last few months, I was brought in to just assist and help move this forward. So I thank you all for all the lively discussion this week or two on the list of on the different options for recommendation five. And I also thank everyone that had the time to provide input when we were doing the office hours, which gave us gave Heather and I and you know, the leadership team from the GNSO Council insight into the next steps forward. So what we'd like to do today is walk through those the recommendations that were agreed upon, one through four, first, and staff will be providing an overview of everything for us. And then we'll have a discussion of all the recommendations, but I'm hoping to cover the first four in just maybe the first half hour of the call, leaving plenty of time to discuss the options for recommendation five. And it sounds like in the email list, there's, you know, people have definitely thought about this and have a point of view. One thing we would like to do to institute today in this call is put a time limit on each person's intervention or discussion. We are not limiting how many times you talk, but we're going to limit it to 2 minutes per intervention. So staff's going to kindly monitor that for us, so please don't be offended if you are told your time's up. This is something that's used at every ICANN meeting, and that way it gives a fair and balanced use of the time for all members. So I'm going to turn this over to Mary to give the an overview of the discussion of the previous agreed upon recommendations.
George here, I've had my hand up. I don't know if anybody's monitoring.
We are, George, but we're going to let Mary do her overview first, and then we will, Mary,
A question about the agenda itself?
Sure, go ahead, but remember you have 2 minutes.
Yeah. On April 26th, you wrote that it is the role of the working group, not the liaison or the council, to drive the effort to a final document for presentation to council. Now, this was presented as a proposed agenda, and now it's being called an agenda that the membership has not had input into. And I think that as members, we should be dictating what's happening and you know, issuing a 98-page document before a day before the meeting, and expecting everyone to have read it and be able to discuss it coherently. I think it's very strange, and to expect that we're going to have it decided upon by next Tuesday in advance for a May, you know, an artificial May deadline that council has supposedly created out of without any reference to the working group guidelines. To me, does it make sense? And so I think if it's true that you want to work towards a consensus, we should start the agenda with the document that I've repeatedly tried to get posted to the screen, and I'll post it again to the chat. And that really tells us where we are. Like, that's the stumbling block. Recommendation 5. Let's start there, and then all the rest is simple. You know, do the hard stuff first, not the easy stuff first. Everybody's wanting to finish this work, and we should start at the hard stuff. And if you put up that page, it's clear. Option 3 is dead. Option 2 is dead. Option 5 is dead. We should be talking about options 1, 4, and 6. And option 4 obviously has the most support. Option 1 almost has the same amount of support. So we're here to drive consensus, not, you know, to the history lesson of all the easy stuff. Thank you. So I propose that we modify the agenda, and I'd like other people's input on modifying this proposed agenda to reflect what the needs of the actual membership is. Thank you.
Thank you, George, for your input. This was a decision made by GNSO Council leadership, and we're going to move forward with the current agenda. Mary, could you please actually, you know, go through these recommendations for us? We'd really appreciate that.
Yes, of course, Susan. And hi, everyone. This is Mary from staff. What you should be seeing on the screen here is the short document that we sent out, I believe, yesterday. And much of what is on this document, in fact, I think just about everything on this document is about recommendations and proposals that have been discussed by this group for some time. Leaving aside the open issue, which we have put at the end of the document, as a potential recommendation 5 to be filled in and completed based on the group's agreement on any of the 6 policy options that have been under discussion. And we have included the text of all those 6 policy options at the end of the document as well. So I believe what Susan wanted me to just briefly go through with the group for purposes of a refresher, as well as to confirm that the agreement that was reached amongst the group quite some time ago on what is now the first 4 recommendations still stands. What we have done in this excerpt document is bolded the proposed text of those 4 recommendations. We've also included a note, and you'll see that they are pretty much substantively identical either to what we originally published for public comment over a year ago, or that mirrors the subsequent modifications that this group made following public comments received. So I understand what you're saying, George, about the time. Certainly, after today's call, we would ask that the working group focus on whether or not the text of these first 4 recommendations as a start, and we'll come to the final issue later in this call, whether these first 4 recommendations reflect the agreement that was reached. So recommendation 1 is unchanged from what was published from the initial report, and this is the first recommendation that the group agreed on, like I said, quite some time ago. I don't propose to spend any time on that. If we move on to recommendation 2, if we just start with the note in the non-bolded part at the bottom of page 1, I think those who have been participating for a while will recall that this recommendation is not the same recommendation as – oh, I'm sorry, somebody is trying to call me. Anyway, this recommendation 2 is not the same as the one that was published for public comment. It was – modified based on public comments received and reviewed by the working group, and yet it still deals with the procedure under Article 6 ter of the Paris Convention. I don't propose to go into details about what the change was, because that was discussed extensively by the group about 9 to 10 months ago. So I'll only request here, Susan and everyone, is that as you look at this draft language that's in bold, this reflects accurately what the group agreed to do. In other words, that we allow for compliance with the Article 6 procedure, as one form of evidence for an IGO to demonstrate standing under the UDRP or the URS. And this can be done in lieu of trademark rights. We do try to make it clear that two things. One, this is an alternative mechanism. So if an IGO can demonstrate trademark rights, like any other trademark holder, that would still be the case. And secondly, that if the IGO does not rely on trademark rights but wishes, for example, to rely on compliance with 6TER, that's not necessarily determinative under this policy. It will fall to be determined by each panelist under each proceeding. So hopefully this language reflects that understanding that was reached. If I move on now to page 2, the third recommendation is a shortened form of what we had published for public comment. You might recall that for public comment, in addition to what is in the bolded section, we had published two policy options regarding immunity for community feedback. Because we have now since extended that discussion on immunity, we now have the 6 options that are being discussed. For this recommendation 3, what staff did was to pick out that part of the original recommendation that was agreed. And so essentially this recommendation 3 basically says that there will be a policy guidance document, this was discussed previously, and that document will outline the various procedural filing options that are available to an IGO so that it can perhaps avoid any particular thorny questions of immunity. So we don't expect that this has not changed, and we have the note there. So lastly, and then I'll turn it back to Susan for any discussion, recommendation 4, this is about the question of cost to an IGO for using the UDRP and URS. We note that in a prior circulation of this set of recommendations, we had actually included and INGOs in this recommendation 4, which is incorrect since recommendation 1 does exclude INGOs from any further consideration. So we've made that correction here. And we also just want to point out that this recommendation does not actually say that IGOs will have free access to the UDRP or the URS. It simply says that ICANN should investigate the feasibility of providing such low-cost or no-cost access. And again, we believe this is reflective of the agreement that the group reached some months ago. So, Susan, in a nutshell, those are recommendations 1 through 4, which, like I said, were agreed to by the group following its review of the comments to the initial report. And we just wanted to make sure that the group has a chance to look at what is the proposed text for these 4 recommendations that should go into the final report. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. That was a thorough overview and very helpful. At this time, does anyone have any comments or concerns on recommendation 1 through 4? And Mary, if I am clueless on WebEx and hands raised, so if you can help me with that, that would be very helpful. I'm missing Adobe very much right now.
No worries, Susan. And in respect of Adobe, our IT folks did post an update on the ICANN blog. So we may be able to use it at some point. We don't know, but I can circulate the link to that blog. And George, I noticed that you had a hand up. It does look from your comment in chat that that is indeed a new hand and not an old hand. I see also that Reg has said she doesn't know how to raise her hand. Reg, if you click on the hand icon next to your name, that should show a raised hand. But for now, Susan, I'll say that we have George, Paul Keating, and then perhaps Reg, and then Petter. I'll keep score for you.
Okay, thank you very much. George, and I want to remind all again, it's a 2-minute time limit for discussion.
Yeah, George Kirkus for the transcript. I agree with 1, 2, and 3. However, on number 4, I expressed at the time we discussed it last year that I don't support recommendation number 4. And I remember at the time There was also other people that were opposed to option number four. If I remember correctly, Mike wrote about what would have been one of those people, and that's why that recommendation number four, I think, should have been subject to a proper consensus call to get the feedback from the membership. If we're still negotiating the text of recommendation four, I could suggest various modifications, such as, you know, both sides would have been properly funded. For example, it would be a three-member panel rather than just a one-member panel with the IGO being subsidized. But I don't believe ICANN should be, for one, subsidizing anybody, and two, if they are going to be subsidizing a lawsuit or a domain dispute, they should be providing the money equally to both sides. Thank you.
Okay, and I think Paul Keating was the next up.
Hi, thank you. Paul Keating for the record. I just wanted to second George's comment about not remembering that number four had been subject to consensus, because I think my objection was exactly the same, that ICANN shouldn't be subsidizing people. As to number two, I thought that we had originally agreed that the reference to six-tier was that in and of itself it didn't establish trademark rights, but the panelists could, together with other evidence supplied, treat it as sufficient to establish the equivalent of a trademark for element one of the EFP. The way it's written seems to imply that six-tier in and of itself can be sufficient, and I don't believe that's what we had agreed to, but I've asked other people to confirm or tell me that phrase. The other one is, no, that's it. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. And we will, staff is keeping, you know, we have the recording of this call, and we'll keep some notes on concerns with the language and the point of view of the recommendation. And Mary, I've forgotten the next people in line, so if you can help me with that.
Sure. It is Reg and then Petter, Susan.
Okay. Reg, please go ahead.
Thanks. This is Reg Levy for the transcript. Based on what I've been reading on the email list, it seems that we generally have a grasp of the recommendations. So I'm not sure if this is an opportunity to discuss all of the recommendations and or have them explained, or if it is an opportunity to express support and or lack of support for some of the recommendations.
So we do plan to follow the formal consensus process for a working group after this call, and staff will, council leadership actually probably with staff will send out exactly how the process works and how we're doing that. So we will do a call for consensus, but we thought since this, you know, even though the email list has been very active in the last week or so in discussing at least recommendation five, that it would be good to sort of go over each of these recommendations and see where the challenges were and give people a voice, and then we'll do a consensus call so that we've followed the formal process completely. But if you'd like to state what you know, I'm not going to prevent you from stating what you
I've support. Said it on the email list. I don't see the reason to take up space. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks, Rich. And Petter, please go ahead.
Thanks. Petter here. Yes, as said, we made these conclusions on a very early stage, and what we need now is to have the formal decision on it, and I hope that if we're going to discuss anything, there will be more of a minor rewriting of misspellings or clarifications or so. Just two comments. One is to the recommendation number two when it comes to Article 6-tier. As far as I remember, when we started to discuss this, we saw Article 6-tier as the one and only way to identify, and then we realized that there could be other ways to identify an IGO name protection. So as I read it and as I understand it, as it is now, is that six-tier is still one of the possible and probably the most common, will be the most common way to identify, but there are also other ways. So either a component that is an IGO provide Article 6-tier registration or some other documents or a combination. And as to number four, that was more of a diplomatic way to put over the question to the board, as we decided that we didn't want to make a clear recommendation in any way. So it's the meaning, as I remember it, was more to say that we recommend that you investigate the possibilities. And if that can be rephrased in some way and still saying that, well, it's not on our board, on our table to make a final recommendation on the sum or something, but to further investigate how to solve this problem, I'm fine with that. Thanks.
Thanks, Petter. And actually, you know, Mary and I had a discussion on this because having not been part of the discussion for the last 4 years, it, you know, recommendation four is just to investigate the feasibility. It's not really making the recommendation to provide IGOs access at no or limited cost. So, all right, Mary, anybody else in our...
At the moment, Susan, I see a hand from Paul Keating, but that may be an old hand, and the same with Reg. So,
it's new.
Okay, so we have a hand from Paul, and Reg, your hand is up as well. So Paul and then Reg.
Reg, okay. Paul, please go ahead.
Yes, I just want to respond briefly to what Petter had mentioned. I believe that the conclusion we reached was that six-tier in and of itself did not establish trademark rights because, number one, it was simply a creation by appointment, if you will, by the sponsoring country, and it was subject to objection from other countries. So you could have a six-tier pronouncement, and you had a majority or a number of states that objected to it. There's no process in the six-tier in the Paris Convention for dealing with that context. So you're left with not knowing what the status of this mark might be or this claim might be without reading all the finely ingrained objections or non-objections. And we compared it specifically to the similarity to a U.S. state trademark filing, which also is summarily granted without any form of review, contrary to most other trademark registration authorities. And on that basis, we concluded that the sixth tier in and of itself does not grant you trademark rights. You need other things on top of that. It's one element that could get you over the hurdle, but not in and of itself, regardless of what you're providing. If you're just relying on sixth tier, that was never good enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And Reg, please go ahead.
Thanks. I just want to say that with regard to recommendation number four, I do think that it would be most appropriate for us to, if we are going to pass the buck with a sense of our recommendations. At the very least, a summary of the direction that we were leaning before we decided to pass the buck. And rather than just saying, here, this is your problem.
And then what would you recommend? How would you recommend doing that? What do you have language for that at all?
Well, I mean, it would depend on what the results are and whether, you know, whether it was 50-50 we were deadlocked, whether it was 30-70 we were in deadlock. Or if we just couldn't reach any consensus, we had these five recommendations because I would assume that we would not submit recommendation number four to them. that we had these five recommendations and they were sort of equal support. Like, it would depend on what the actual support for each of the recommendations was. But I think that allowing them to not have to reinvent the wheel, given that I do think that this falls directly under our remit, and so if we are going to pass that buck, we should at least do so with full knowledge that that is what we're doing and that we are making it easy for the next person down the line to do it. Because at the end of the day, this is an ICANN community issue, and it doesn't matter whether this group of the community deals with it or a different group of the community deals with it. It is our problem.
Okay. Noted. All right. Anybody else have comments or concerns with the language on 1 through 4?
No hands raised, Susan, at this point.
Okay. Then, Mary, could we hear recommendation 5 and all the options, just to, you know, bring us up to speed on that?
Sure, and thanks, Susan. This is Mary again from staff. And as we noted, recommendation 5 in its current state really just, first of all, it says it is about jurisdictional immunity for IGOs, but not INGOs, but the rest of it remains to be filled in. So what we do have here as a note before we get to the 6 policy options is that we explain for purposes of the final report what was published for public comment and what was done subsequently within the working group to try to reach consensus. So obviously the wording here will need to be changed and added to depending on the group's final consensus, if any. So Susan, the 6 policy options follow. And option 1 is at the bottom of page 2, and then the remaining options are on page 3. And my apologies, I should have thought to start the options on a separate page for WebEx purposes. But essentially, I think we're now at the stage where we can, as a working group, continue discussions on the various options, which have not changed since sometime in October 2017.
Okay, and I think there's been a lot of discussion on the list of these options. Does anybody have any comments or concerns about the different options?
Susan, I see George's hand raised, and if I may, if I can ask Paul Keating, if you wouldn't mind muting your line, because this is creating a little bit of noise. Thank you. So we have George with his hand up, Susan.
Okay. George, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Krikos for the transcript. First, I think Mary just said that the options haven't changed since October. I think she meant December, because in October we had the 3 options. Now we have 6. Secondly, I'd like to have the PDF put up, which summarizes the discussions of the past week on the mailing list. I will post a link to it if it's not going to be posted. But basically, right now, as things stand, option 3 is dead, option 2 is dead, option 5 is dead in terms of ability to reach consensus. And so we should be focusing our efforts on options 1, 4, and 6. Nobody's posting it to the WebEx, but I'll continue. On option number 1, there's only 1 opponent, and we can add Phil and Petter as basically opponents of that one and every other option except option number 3 as well, presumably. Option 4 has no opponents, but presumably Phil and Petter would be opposed to that. And option 6 would have 5.
George?
Yeah?
Please don't speak for Phil and Petter or anybody else on the working group.
I'm basing
that's
that on
not
the market.
Fair.
On the,
and,
on the,
no, but that's not fair. If you want to assert your own position, that's fine.
Right.
But we're not going to post your doc because that does not follow formal consensus.
But
so,
we haven't been following from the beginning.
that's not true. And we're in this situation because you filed the 3.7.
No.
The council leadership has taken very serious thought about how to move forward with this and what is required in the 3.7. So, but it, I really am interested in hearing your comments and your personal position, but don't attribute others.
Right.
I just do not think that's fair.
Okay. That shouldn't have counted towards my 2 minutes, so I'd like to continue with the time I had left.
Yes, please go ahead.
Obviously, I support every option except option number 3, and folks can see on the mailing list how others have felt that aren't here. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Okay, anybody else have comments or concerns about the options? Would like to voice their opinion about these?
I see Paul Keating's hand is up, Susan.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Paul, please.
I'm a little confused about what we're trying to accomplish here, Susan. Maybe you could dial this back a little bit and explain. Are we now going through and expected to discuss our pros and cons about the 6 options, or are we trying to achieve consensus here, or what?
So we can't achieve formal consensus here. That will be a different process, because we do want to adhere to the working group, you know, the PDP processes. And this is something that the council leadership has been very, very concerned about. And but what we did want to do is, because there was not a working group meeting for so many months, is to give people the voice, the time to voice their opinion, voice their concerns, and then as we move on after this meeting, then we'll implement the formal process for consensus. So, and I know that a lot of you have spent a lot of time responding via the email list, which is always really good for discussion, and I appreciate that. But because that's not the formal consensus process, we can't accept that as the working group consensus. So if you have any other, you know, edits to language, if you'd like to propose things, then we can take those back to the leadership, you know, and we can, you know, go through the formal consensus process after this working group meeting.
Okay, so what we're trying to do during this call then is to flesh out if there are any further changes to any of these options that are on the list.
Yes, if you'd like to propose any, that's fine. I can't say that they'll be agreed upon today or agreed upon at all. I have no idea. But if you have concerns with language, then you could post those. And if you would like to do that via the email list during the consensus process, that's also a possibility.
So can you describe, sorry to, I'm just having a couple of questions, but the consensus process in your mind, is this a transparent poll that we're going to conduct? And if so, then prior to the poll, we all have to agree on the questions and the text of the questions, right? Or is,
yes.
Or is there going to be one phone call and everybody just stands up and votes?
No, it will be an online process.
Okay, so what is the process for dealing with everybody, assuming anybody, responds by email to make suggested changes to the actual text that is in the proposed document on my screen here? What is the process of resolving that so that we can get the consensus as to the text of each option? Because what I'm hearing in this call is we're not there yet.
No, we are.
This is Mary.
Yeah, so please go ahead, Mary.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No. I think, and to be honest, Mary understands these processes much better than I. So, Mary, please go ahead.
That's very kind, Susan. I don't know that that's actually the case, but just to remind everyone that the aim, obviously, is to produce a report to the GNSO Council that will document all the recommendations and the level of consensus reached for each. typically, we also include in a final report proposals that could have become recommendations but that did not reach consensus. And as you recall, there are various levels of consensus and non-consensus in the working group guidelines. So it's important to document what the ultimate result was, even if no consensus was reached. And where no consensus is reached, and I won't go through the definitions here, but in cases where there's divergence, for example, it is possible for members to file minority statements. So part of the consensus process will allow for that as well. Typically, what we do in GNSO PDPs is that when discussions have reached a stage where the leadership team of that working group believes that we can open a formal consensus call, we do that by announcing it both on the call, like in today, and on the list. Typically, it's open for something like a two-week period, during which obviously people can engage in back and forth on the list. We don't necessarily or typically do votes. In fact, votes are actually discouraged under the guidelines, although in exceptional circumstances, polling to give a sense of where people may be is permissible. So after that two-week period, the leadership team of that PDP then considers all the input that everyone has given and makes an initial designation of consensus. I will say at this point that for most PDP working groups, by the time we reach that stage, meaning there's been extensive discussion amongst the group, meaning that a formal consensus call has been opened, and like I said, typically that's about 2 weeks, to allow people to further discuss if they wish, to allow those representing perhaps constituency groups to consult with their membership. By the end of that two-week period, typically the levels of consensus as designated by the leadership team are accurate or considered accurate. And of course, as I mentioned, people can submit minority statements. We will then, as staff, incorporate those designated consensus levels and any minority statements into the final report. So, Susan, the last thing I'll say here, and I noticed that George has made some comments in the chat, obviously this is an iterative process. Part of the iteration really has been the discussion that we've been engaged in for some time. And, of course, if the designations of consensus are challenged, then we can allow for additional time, if need be, to try and resolve that issue. But by and large, this is the process that we follow for all GNSO PDPs. So discussions, open a formal consensus call period, have a designation of consensus at the end of that period, and if there's divergence that that people want to file minority statements for, we allow them to do that, and all that goes into the final report. And as George says, the discussions aren't just on calls. They include discussions on mailing lists and as well as at public meetings and so forth. So, sorry, I think it took more than 2 minutes, Susan. And, Steve, you should have told me that. Thanks.
Well, staff doesn't have to hold to that. I do, though. So thanks for the clarification. And Paul, I do think that if you have language to propose or things, as you mentioned, the you were concerned with the six-tier language, that we could, you know, take some of that language and see, you know, add that, either remove part of, you know, some of these consensus or some of the recommendations, excuse me, wrong word, and, you know, I mean, change things as the working group sees fit, but we, you know, this is not a formal consensus call today. It's really just to give everybody a voice. And do we have anybody else with their hands up, Mary?
I see a hand from George, but that I'm not sure if that's a new hand. And then we have a new hand from Phil and a hand from Paul. Oh, sorry. So it's George and Phil.
And Paul.
Okay.
So I don't know how to get
and
my
Paul. George, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Krieger, so the transcript. Yeah, even amongst these changes, there still needs to be minor changes in terms of the language. For example, Option number four, ZACS only refers to the UDRP. It should be modified to be UDRP-ERS. And there's similar kinds of small tweaks of the language that needs to be done for each one because, you know, these were kind of done informally and then they were kind of formalized without, you know, actually fixing all of the little bits and pieces of the options. Secondly, I'm heartened that you seem to be wanting to follow the correct working group guidelines process. You know, that's all I've wanted from the start with regards to the Section 3.7. So if that's what's going to be happening, then I'm very happy. Can you please confirm, though, that there's not going to be a report being sent to the GENOSO Council next week because everybody got that 98-page document, and it, from what I could tell, it seemed as though you know, we were being railroaded into this document that was going to be sent regardless of how we felt. So can you confirm there's no document that's going to be sent to the GENOSO Council next week, and you know, we're going to just follow the proper working group guidelines process? Thank you.
Thanks, George. Those are good questions. And if you have edits to this, I would suggest I encourage you to do a red line. Obviously, you know, they need to be edits that, you know, don't change the whole recommendation at this point, because I do think 1 through 4, at least, the working group has, they may not be exactly word perfect, but they are, you know, the general concepts have been agreed on. We did discuss when the report, and we are going to delay it to the following week, so you have additional time to review the report. And to remind you again, you know, I mean, this has been a contentious discussion. It's a contentious issue, and minority reports may be appropriate. So that everybody's voice is heard. And then I think we have Phil next.
Yes, Phil for the record, and thank you, Susan, for conducting this call. I wanted to make some brief comments on option 4. I don't agree with the option, but I recognize that reasonable people can disagree, but I do have a concern and believe the language needs work. I note I'm speaking in an individual capacity, but I am one of the three co-chairs of the RPM review working group, which is on its current timeline scheduled to take up UDRP matters as of mid-2019. We just had a member of that working group raise a suggestion for going to council with a charter change request, and after 2 weeks of discussion determined that we had flexibility under the charter to handle that without burdening council. So my concern here is that the last sentence calls for, and since this basically goes to council for adoption as a policy recommendation, says that basically the issue that was before this working group on IGO immunity should be referred to the RPM working group by council. I believe it's inappropriate for council to do so without at least consultation with the RPM review working group. Most, if not all, of the members of this working group also participate in that working group. They have the ability to raise the IGO issue when we reach UDRP. So to make it short, I think if there's support for this option, it should note that this can be raised within the working group and that council should not ask that working group to take up an issue before it's been discussed within the working group itself. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil. And Paul, please go ahead.
Thank you. Susan, I have a question for you, but first to Phil. Phil, I'm happy with that change if you want to make it. I never saw that the council's request is not an order. It's not an edict. It's also, I imagine he does it in consultation with the working group, but if you want to add language to that effect, I have no problem with that. Susan, one thing that you did say it was extremely concerning to me, and that is, in light of the fact that we haven't had a formal consensus call, how is it possible to actually issue this report, whether it's on the 14th, as you originally suggested, or a week later, unless we're going to get that consensus call done beforehand? I understand the political pressure and the desires of people, you know, above us in the organization to see that happen, but I don't see how we can do that and honor the CDC consensus process, which you clearly supported. I just don't see how that happens, because my main concern is that once a report is filed, it's filed, and it becomes then very difficult to make changes to it, both from a subjective standpoint as well as from an objective standpoint. It's somewhat like trying to unring the bell. So I would very much object to the issuance of any report by this working group until the consensus has in fact been accomplished, and the consensus process that you've laid out has been completed. I think that could be relatively quick. I don't see that it has to drag on forever. We could advise the council that we are intending to file, but we need to have a formal consensus call prior to doing so, and Mary could send out the 2-week notice tomorrow. And we could have a call within that period of time and get this thing finished and put to bed. Otherwise, you end up with a very contentious set of communications, as you probably witnessed going back and forth in this working group. And everybody, you know, a large part of that is based upon concerns of lack of transparency, concerns of being railroaded, concerns of being spoken for, and having positions taken by the group without having complied with the consensus process. I'm trying to remove that problem, and I would strongly object to us doing anything that would exacerbate the pre-existing condition or which would result in the filing of any form of report by this working group prior to us having concluded our formal consensus process. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. And I agree. And, you know, so what we were planning on doing is we can open the consensus call after this call. You know, like I said, staff will send out exactly what the process is and the timeline, and then do a final call on the final report, which we're trying to hit the document deadline for GNSO Council, so this can be on at least delivered to them at the June meeting and for consideration, probably not decided upon. You know, I mean, Council, obviously GDPR is affecting everything right now, so we're trying to aim for that motion deadline and document deadline, but I think we can get this done, get a consensus call going, and a call on the final report fairly quickly. And in looking at the process, you know, as we went through the timeline, it looked like it would work. So I agree that this should be open, transparent, and that is what council leadership has instructed me to do. Is to make sure, and so there is no perception of the working group being, you know, sort of pushed one way or the other. Not that I am saying that what was occurring. I can't comment on that, but so we are trying to stick to the bylaws as closely as we can with the detail that the bylaws have. So in some cases, it's not as clear as others for certain actions, but we are doing our best to adhere to that.
Okay, but Susan, can you commit that you're not gonna release a report for filing and for consideration by the council prior to us completing our consensus process? What I'm asking you to do, point blank, yes or no?
Yes, point blank, yes.
Thank you. That leaves me no end, and I'm sure there are a number of other people on this call breathing a sigh of relief, okay?
So okay.
Hopefully the anxiety level just dropped about a factor of 10.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Susan?
I just have a technical question for Mary. If she can release Word version of the proposed document that we have on the screen, it's much easier to manipulate when you're doing redlining and sending it back.
Susan, George's hand is up, but I can respond to Paul either now or after George.
Yeah, please go ahead. George, do you mind waiting just a bit here?
Yeah, I can wait.
Thanks.
Thank you, George. This is Mary from staff for the record. And yes, we can send around a Word document. George had asked about a red line, and I will just say that when we tried to red line against the initial report, partly because of the length of the document, because we moved text around and renumbered things, it looked horrible. So what we can do when we send it around is to indicate where the major additions and changes were. Our other request will be for the group to, if possible, at least in the first go-around, limit your suggested edits to the substantive changes. And it actually would be helpful if you did it as comments, unless it really needed to be a red line within the document. The reason we say that is because it is up to staff to track all the different versions. And of course, one problem with Word is that if you've got six people editing the same document, we get back six different versions, and it's really hard to merge them. So we would ask for most comments, you can let us know if we, mistakenly, got grammar and things wrong. But in terms of substance, that's really probably the best comments. And if you can put them in comments where possible, that will be helpful. The other thing, Susan, to follow up on your and Paul's exchange is that based on the staff understanding of where the council leadership and yourself and the rest of the council are, as part of the broader context of not just the IGO protections issue overall, but also in terms of where the council is going to manage its PDP time frame, and I see my time may be up, so I'll just finish up right here and say that the council is very concerned that we wrap up our work. So my sense, Susan, is that you really do want us to hit the 10th June document deadline, and if we can't, then I think we do need to think about how we can address that situation, but we should be aiming to be done by the 10th of June. Thank you.
Agreed, Mary. And thank you for that input. George, please go ahead.
Yeah, George Krigels again. First, I'd like to point out that I'm very happy, again, to hear what I'm hearing, so that everybody's acting very constructively. That's a big positive, so kudos to everybody for trying to reach the consensus. I think it's also very important that we keep the weekly calls going, because those are the ones that really build the momentum and ensure that the work keeps going. So I would ask that we continue the weekly calls until the end, because if we don't have those calls, we can get distracted and be infighting. It's these calls that are actually reducing the tension rather than increasing the tension at this point. I see Reg agrees with me in the chat room. Lastly, in terms of the timeline, because of the allowance for the iterative process, where people object to the designations of consensus levels, it's very important that we actually have the best initial designations possible to start. Otherwise, if they're very off from what the sense of the room is right now, they'll be immediately challenged. Like if I see certain things being presented as consensus when I know that they're not, based on past week's emails, I'm obviously going to raise an objection. So I think we should definitely put some thought into what those initial designations are based on the past week's calls, past week's emails, which I haven't used as a poll. We've talked about that on the mail list. And that will actually speed the work and allow us to get done quicker by the beginning of June, hopefully. But yeah, I hope everybody else would agree to the weekly calls. I know there's some events going on with INTA and the GDD in the coming weeks that affected the RPM working group, but we should still keep to the schedule, and those who want to come can come, and those who don't, and it'll act as a complement to the mailing list and allow us to stay on track. Thank you.
Thanks, George. And please note Mary's message in the chat that, by the working group guidelines, that the working group leadership designate the consensus. So, but you always have an option to object and challenge, but the leadership has no interest in doing anything but really evaluating consensus. And if you know, we will be able to, you know, look at what has gone on and how people have where they have indicated their consensus and take that all into consideration so that it is a, you know, true evaluation of that. We'll take your suggestion on the working group calls into consideration, though I think the working group has a lot of work to do sort of offline by reviewing the report and determining their own consensus on these options and other recommendations. So so we, you know, and then as you noted, there are several events going on that are going to be distracting to people. But we'll take that into consideration. I'll go back to Heather with that. Right. Any other questions, concerns, statements?
Paul Tattersfield, I'm only on the phone. Can I speak, please?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm a bit concerned, and I raised it a couple of times on the mailing list, that the Swain memo isn't relevant to what the working group's considering. I've asked people to refute my reasons behind it, and so far nobody's been able to do so. That gives me a bit of a problem because quite a lot of the final report references him, certainly in the notes and that sort of thing, and it gives the incorrect position on the actual immunity that IGOs would enjoy, or rather don't enjoy. So I'm just wondering how the best way to reconcile that is and how to get that removed from the final report. Thank you.
So, Mary, I'm going to ask you to weigh in on that. Besides the comments
yes.
and proposed edits, what do you think?
In respect of Paul's comments here, and so forgive us, Paul Tattersfield, and I see Paul Keating's agreed with you. Staff has gone back to look at the Swain memo, and you'll recall that the Swain memo was the subject of extensive discussions amongst the working group prior to publishing the initial report. The Swain memo was published as part of the initial report. And George, I take your point. The staff does not participate in the PDP. We are not part of the decision-making process. So for what it's worth, in our view, having looked at it multiple times, we do think that the Swain memo does address some of the questions. First of all, it is predicated on an IGO filing a UDRP or URS, winning that, and then the respondent who loses that filing a claim in a national court. Secondly, the Swain memo expressly acknowledges that that event, the outcome remains to be decided by a national court, but that in many cases, by submitting to mutual jurisdiction, the IGO will in many courts be considered to have waived that immunity. So to the extent that the objection to the Swain memo is that it is not predicated on these bases, we just cannot see where that is the case. And on top of it, the fact that the Swain memo was part of the initial report, no objections were raised, the group discussed this extensively, and none of this was raised at the time, we find it procedurally as well as substantively difficult to account for either removing it or changing that part of the report. So with respect, that's the staff's perspective, understanding we are not full members or participants of this group. Thank you, Susan.
Thanks, Mary, and thanks for the reminder that it was in the initial report too, the first draft.
Can I come back on that? Is that okay?
Yes, please.
There was another mistake in the initial report as well, and that had to be corrected, and that involved an awful lot of rewriting, and that was mentioned to the chairs before the report was issued, but they still pressed on anyway, and that wasted an awful lot of working group time. It is a fundamental problem. I mean, it is so massive that it calls into question the whole of the report. I mean, this isn't just a minor issue. This isn't cosmetic. It really needs redressing, and it should be redressed before we even get to putting any recommendations or options in place. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Your concerns are noted. Okay, anybody else?
Susan, we have a hand from Paul Keating, which may be a new hand. And just so to follow up with Paul Tattersfield, if you wouldn't mind, Paul, either sending an email or letting us know, just for the record, exactly what the specific fundamental error is, because there's been quite a lot of emails on this, so we just want to be sure that it is captured correctly for the record today. And I noticed that Paul Keating's hand has gone down, Susan, so no other hands are up unless Paul Tattersfield would like to clarify the fundamental error so that we can have it on the record. Thank you.
The error is quite simple. If an IGO, if the issue comes before a court, there's two ways it can come before a court. An IGO can issue proceedings against somebody who's been naughty with one of their domains, or a trademark lawyer can issue proceedings against an IGO. When the IGO issues proceedings, it cannot have immunity because it's initiated the proceedings. It cannot have immunity either in the initial proceeding or any follow-on proceedings. When the TM lawyer the trademark lawyer defending the TM holder comes against the IGO, then the IGO can assert immunity and block the case. When you take it back to a UDRP hearing, a UDRP hearing is just an administrative alternative to the court cases. So when you get back to that situation, you have two cases that can happen again. Either the IGO initiates proceedings or a TM lawyer initiates proceedings. What's happening with Swain is he's taking the rights that are given when a TM lawyer issues proceedings, and then he's applying those incorrectly to when a IGO issues proceedings in the UDRP, and you cannot do that because in a court case one has, one doesn't have. What Swain's trying to do is make it so that both of them have, or both of them have partially, depending on which part of the report you refer to, and that is just clearly wrong. And there is nowhere in the world, in any jurisdiction, where you can do that. And it doesn't have to be just domains, it can be any other matter. And I've raised the question several times on the mailing list, and nobody anywhere can show me an example of where they would be entitled to immunity after initiating proceedings. Thank you.
Mary, I need to address, can you just go ahead? I have somebody at my front door, hold on.
Okay, apologies, Susan. And so, Paul, I think that George is suggesting that maybe you can make some suggestions to the list about changing the report, because that's probably, you know, not much point us continuing this on this call. But just to note again for the record that the Professor Swain's memo does address the situation where it's the UDRP proceeding initiated by the IGO. And as a result, in his memo, he does expressly say that in some jurisdiction, as a result of the initiation, the IGO will probably lose its immunity where the losing registrant subsequently files a court proceeding. So again, we're happy to take this offline, but just for also a refresher for those who have not been part of this conversation. I don't know if Susan is back yet, but George, I think
I
your hand... Okay, I think George's hand just went up, Susan.
Okay, and I apologize, everyone. I had a very persistent, I'm working from home, and had a very persistent person at my front door that would not stop ringing the doorbell. So he's gone now. George, please go ahead.
George Rikos again for the transcript. Hopefully I can help clarify the situation. I don't have the SLIM report in front of me, but in the SLIM report, he sets up a theoretical example where the IGO is defending a case, and instead of that, there's the theoretical example that is relevant is where they're the ones initiating the case. And I think that's what Paul Tattersfield is talking about. And so he kind of started from a false premise in an earlier part of the report, and then he went on to use that to the situation where overall, the IGO is actually initiating the dispute, you know, looking at it in its fuller context, you know, they did it through the UDRP, and then it, you know, the roles get reversed when it's challenged in court. And that's really the quirk of process that we've identified, that this happens because if it was a regular lawsuit, what would happen is that the IGO would be the initiator in court and obviously can't use the immunity defense because they're actually the complainant, not the defendant. Because they go to the EDRP path first, then the roles are reversed when you actually get to court because they're now the defendant instead of the plaintiff. And so that's the root of the quirks process, and that's also in that yoyo.email kind of analysis of the cause of action in the UK. So I think Paul isn't talking about how Professor Swain dealt with the quirks process part. It was the premise before that, earlier in the report, that set up an example that isn't actually very relevant. And I actually had emailed about that on the mailing list before Professor Swain met with us on that day, I guess a couple of years ago, and then I addressed it to him during the call, and he said he'd think about it, but I don't think he actually modified the report, and I think that's why Paul's concerned that, you know, we should maybe make that clarification and, you know, add appropriate language to the broader report, and I'll probably be sure to have my own language that I want to bring to the report with regards to, you know, the underlying root causes that are similar to the yoyo.email and so on. I don't think the current draft report actually captures all the kind of analysis that's been taking place on the mailing list. It's a bit broad in some places. Thank you.
Thanks, George. And any
Susan,
yes, go
I
ahead.
See Paul Keating and Petter hands up.
Okay. Paul and Petter. Okay, please. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, thank you. Paul Keating for the record. I think that part of the issue, Mary, is that perhaps staff focused on the initial part of Swain's report and pulled a lot of the wording out of the initial part of his report, whereas as Paul Satterfield correctly pointed out, the real issue is a very limited one as to which the primary part of the report, which is generally dealing with immunity as a whole, really doesn't apply and wasn't applicable. But I would encourage Paul to come up with his proposed draft and the rationale for that, and we can deal with it as one chunk when we have our next call. And so that's my suggestion. We can hash this out once we see some real text, and I'd ask Mary to recirculate the Swain memo so that those other people can actually have it in their inbox and actively compare it with what's written here. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Petter, please go ahead. Petter? Are you muted? Cannot hear you, Petter. Whoops.
Right now.
Are you there now?
Do you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just short. Professor Swain's report is a part of our documentation. As a reminder, our conclusion was that he didn't say a clear yes or no to our questions. So we still have it as a part of our report, and from that we can make any possible conclusions that we want to and that can be made on his report. And I'm still pretty sure, also from my own legal experiences, that there is, in fact, if we look at the global perspective, no clear yes or no if a court can take a case or will deal with it, will accept the claims for neutrality or not. So, again, I hope that the changes that we find that we need to do on the text on these options will be more or less just minor clarifications or references as we on an early stage, even if we don't have an official decision on it, discussed this fairly well on each topic and decided on the recommendations as they are now. So, but I'm open for minor clarifications, corrections. But Professor Swain's report needs to be a part of the base we have. Thanks.
Thanks, Peter, for your input. Okay, we still have about, I don't know, about 15 minutes left of the call, maybe a little longer. Any other hands up?
Susan, I see George and Paul Keating. And Peter, if that's an old hand, would you mind taking it down? But if it's a new hand, then we, okay. So now we have George and Paul Keating.
George?
George, I just wanted to move things forward orally. We have the weekend coming up, so if we can actually get the Word version and a red line version available before the weekend, that would be good to allow people who want to work on things ample time. Thank you. That's it.
Thanks, George. Okay, and Paul.
I just wanted to see where we were on this George's suggestion about having weekly calls. Since now would be a good time to decide that.
So on that, you know, that wasn't something we had discussed, that Heather and the council leadership had discussed. So I'll need to go back to Heather and talk to her about that. And then I'll get back to you hopefully by Monday on that if I can get a hold of Heather. You know, a lot of this work could be done on email lists, but if the working group as a whole calls would like to, you know, suggest continuing calls between now and then, you know, we'll take that in consideration, and I'll talk to Heather about it.
Well, I just Paul Keating again. I think it would be helpful even if we just put bookmarks, you know, placeholders in the schedule. And you don't have one perhaps this coming week because of the ICANN GDPR conference in Vancouver, but the week after we have one. Just somewhere so we can continue to make progress towards our consensus, because I think that's the goal. You know, I don't want us to lose momentum and then have this go out into some cloud-based concept where people aren't able to actually touch and speak. Email great for generating information, but it's really a hard, harsh way of communicating with people. It just misses the tone, every other aspect of human communication. So I would encourage us to have these, even if it just be placeholders, 6 o'clock on Thursdays, and subject cancellation by the leadership, at least we have it, and people can build it into their schedules. It's very difficult to deal with it in my schedule if it comes up as a last-minute item in the evening, because it's generally when I have all my conference calls is in the evening my time. So there's only so many slots available. Thank you.
Okay. I take that under advisement, and the fact that next week is difficult, the following week is really difficult for me, but I will we'll get back to you soon with that by Monday. So that we can put, if it's possible to schedule calls, then we can get them on your schedule at least a week ahead of time. All right.
No other hands at the moment, Susan.
Okay. So we have a couple of to-dos. You know, I will... with the help of staff, take your questions and concerns to the council leadership. We'll come back to you about calls. We'll provide the red line of the report and this other document. We'll send out all the information on the consensus process and sort of a timeline of exactly when things have to be done. And hopefully we can move forward. If we don't have any other questions or concerns today, we can give everybody back, I don't know, 13 minutes of their day. If not, then put your hand up now. Last call to speak. All right, so we're going to end the meeting. Please stop the recording. And thanks all. It was a good, productive discussion.
Thanks.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Susan. Thank you, everybody.